All right. Before we forge ahead with a look at some of CS50's suite of tools, any questions we can answer? Anything at all? Here's what still lies ahead, and we keep adding and moving things, so keep an eye on moving targets. All right, so let me begin with a look at a tool with which some of you might already be familiar, but also point out some of the teacher-centric capabilities of it. The first such tool being CS50 IDE, IDE meaning Integrated Development Environment. This is a web-based programming environment, the design of which is to enable you and your students to have a standard uniform environment with all the same tools, all the same look, without them having to struggle and without you having to struggle getting every individual Mac and PC and so forth up and running properly. By the end of the semester, we generally aspire to offboard students from this platform so that they don't feel that they can only program in one and only one environment. But you'll find that CS50 IDE, if you've not seen it already, is actually meant to be pretty representative of a typical development environment. It does not have the weight, so to speak, of Eclipse and NetBeans and Visual Studio, if you're familiar with those. And indeed, what CS50 IDE is a set of pedagogical plugins written by folks like Kareem and others on our team that are meant to throw away all the features and clutter and buttons and menu options that the students don't really need intellectually, and to have them focusing really on the tools that are most integral to getting real work done. So with that said, if you were to log into CS50 IDE as a student or teacher, you would initially see a screen a little like this. On the projector here, it's a little hard to see everything, and actually one of the features that we added to it, if you were to go to the view menu and presentation mode, is exactly that. It zooms everything in and it hides some of the clutter that students don't need to see while you're leading a class. So our teaching fellows on campus would do this, and if you're in a classroom projecting, you might want to do the same thing as well. There's essentially three main areas to this environment, and you're certainly welcome later today to play with this if you haven't already, and we're happy to answer questions one-on-one. Allow me to just give an overview visually of the tool. The first two sections are essentially this. You have a standard tabbed browser interface up here where students can write their code, so that's just the code editor. What you'll find is that if you actually write something coherent, it will actually syntax highlight it. So for instance, if I whip up a pretty canonical C program like int main void and then printf hello world, thus far this isn't all that useful insofar as it's just white text. But as soon as I save this, as with command S or control S, depending on Mac or PC, I save a file name, say of hello.c. Now the IDE will immediately recognize that it's a C file, like a lot of IDEs, and actually syntax highlight it for students. It's perhaps important to note, though, that for first-time programmers, they might wonder where these colors came from and how they put them there themselves. And so don't get too accustomed to these features, taking them for granted, I think, without pointing out to students that this is just visual cues. This is truly just ASCII text in their files. And it's just drawing their attention to different things like the strings and the functions and the data types and the like. Those are not semantics they need to worry about typing themselves. And of course, this thing at the bottom, if familiar, is generally called a what? The terminal window or your shell environment. You can call it any number of different things, but it's where you get the sort of low-level access to the machine. And so what is this machine that students have access to? So this is a cloud-based application. It happens to use what's called container technologies these days, whereby every student has his or her own container in the cloud. This is a sort of a lightweight virtual machine, if you're familiar with that term, which is only to say that every student in your class and ours has essentially their own server in the cloud. That server happens to be running Ubuntu Linux, a popular operating system. And they also have the ability to install software in their home directory if they want, change files, add folders, and so forth using lower level Linux commands. If you're not familiar, allow me to wave my hands at what those commands are typically. But commands like ls for listing the contents of a directory, cd for changing directory. But even that's a lot early on for a lot of students and teachers alike. And so there's also a more familiar file browser, which if I click the folder icon, you'll see at top left now, I have a visual representation a la Mac OS or Windows of exactly the same information. So what we'll typically do at the start of the semester is hold students' hands visually and verbally as by only using the graphical part of the IDE, making super clear how we're creating a folder, how we're creating a file, and then generally take those training wheels off and move them into the terminal window, where I dare say they do have far more useful and practical takeaways that frankly are not often introduced when you're using more sort of graphical IDEs like NetBeans and Eclipse and so forth. So students exiting CS50 in all of its forms hopefully get, as a side effect, quite a few practical skills when it comes to manipulating a computer at that level. But beyond that, pedagogically, there's some nice things baked in here. So one, we use the share feature quite often among our students and our teaching fellows. So if you were to click the share icon, a student can share his or her IDE with you as by typing your email address or username in the system. Or you might do the same if you actually want to show your code to someone else. Once you've shared it with someone and he or she is logged in, you can actually chat with them a la Google Chat or Slack or the like. Via the Collaborate tab, you have a nice little chat window that will appear. So if you're helping a student in the evening or if two students are working together on a project, this enables that and more. Indeed, those of you who might like to introduce peer programming in class, whereby two students work together on a project, you could certainly do that by having two people sit next to each other. But it doesn't even have to be that. It can be virtual. And they can see, a la Google Docs, when one student is typing, the other student can see what his or her partner is actually typing as well in real time. So consider that as an ingredient to more peer-based work as well. You'll see a number of other features later today, including the debugger, debug 50, which will allow students and you to step through code line by line, poke around without having to put print commands or printf commands every which way, and a number of other tools as well. But wanted to give first everyone a mental model for the tool that students for the CS50's problems will generally spend most of their time and until the end of the semester when they're welcome to keep using this or they're welcome to start doing things on their own Mac or PC for final projects. Any questions on the IDE or what it is or what it can do? No? All right. So let me propose that we glance a little bit deeper at a couple of the tools here with a quick overview of these and then a demo of a couple of others. So within CS50 IDE is one of CS50's specific tools called Submit50. And you'll see this in later, more detail later today. Submit50 is simply a tool that essentially runs a number of Git commands for students. Git, if unfamiliar, is a version control software. It's probably the most popular these days. Probably the most popular implementation of it is github.com. And indeed, that's the one type of account we require that students have these days so that they have a place to store all of their work. They can sign in using their real name or pseudonym. Doesn't matter so long as you ultimately know their username. And it's a free account. There's no subscription or anything like that. And once they have this account, can they run this command submit50, which effectively copies any work they've done from their CS50 IDE to github.com into a private repository, so to speak, to which they have access. And that's where you can access your code. And again, more on that later today. This means that they can share their work with you, and they also are effectively backing it up in a second place just in case anything might potentially go wrong. Related in spirit to Submit50 is Check50. This is the correctness software, a correctness testing software that you might have seen or you will soon see later today. Not only do we, CS50 here in Cambridge, write checks, so to speak, or tests for all of the problems that we create and we post online for teachers to use, it's open source software, so if you are among those a little more comfortable or a little more adventurous, you can by all means write those same checks yourselves. And what Chad and the team will do later today is give you a taste of what that API, application programming interface, looks like. And I say more comfortable mostly because it's not fully documented just yet. But indeed, one of the projects this summer is to make it easy for everyone to write their own checks as well. And you'll simply store those checks in your own free GitHub account, and we will find them. You don't need our involvement or engagement to authorize them. You can just write them and use them at will. So more on that later today. So one smaller tool that exists within the IDE, and it's also freely installable online per the documentation, whose URL is here. And I'll give these slides to Aaron just after this talk so that you can you don't have to write everything down. So Render50 is kind of a new implementation of an older workflow that we ourselves used to use when providing feedback on students' work. So way back in the day, I guess back in the day when I took CS50, we would literally print out our code, hand in a stapled printout, and we would get handwritten feedback on it. And if you still do that, that's certainly fine. It's a reasonable workflow, but we can certainly do things more digitally these days. And so Render50 was our own first progression to deprecating printouts in favor of PDFs while still making it easy to provide comments on them, whether it's with a tablet or just by typing at your keyboard. So what Render50 quite simply does is it just makes it super easy to take source code, whether it's C or Java or Python or whatever language you're using, and turn it into a nice, pretty syntax highlighted PDF that's by default in landscape mode, so you have a little more room in the margins to type comments, and then you can email it back to students students or Dropbox it or whatever your workflow might be. So this is a whirlwind tour, but there is more documentation online. But let me propose that if I go into a directory that a student has submitted, I've just typed ls to list the files in this directory, and they've submitted to me a whole bunch of files and folders, the interesting ones of which are dictionary.c and speller.c and dictionary.h, perhaps. Arbitrary example. Well, what I can do is a couple of things here. So first, let me run a command I'm actually going to explain in just a moment, CLI 50 for command line 50. And let me type that exact same command again just to demonstrate that I'm indeed in the same place. What render 50 allows me to do is quite simply this. I want to go ahead and run render 50 and output a file name of speller.pdf. And I want to go ahead and render the file called dictionary.c and dictionary.h and speller.c. and enter. And what this command will do is, since I already wrote it earlier, sorry, it's going to go ahead and render those three files, output a file called what I asked it to be, speller.pdf, and then quite simply what I have, in this case in my downloads directory here, where I put it earlier, is just a very simple PDF that looks a little something like this. So these are the contents of the files that we could have seen in any program. And you'll notice it adds the nice pretty syntax highlighting. It adds line numbers so that I can write comments on students' code and refer to things a little more specifically. It also includes a little bookmark toolbar that, depending on what PDF program you're using, you'd open in a different way. But it lets you skip around to the files, which is helpful, especially if you have half a dozen or more files in there. And then we just leave lots of room over here on the right so that we can actually type our comments. We ourselves no longer use this that much because we've transitioned to using yet other tools, GitHub specifically, which you'll see too later today, how we use it for commenting, but another tool for the toolbox that isn't necessarily even CS50 specific. Any questions then on the IDE or on Render 50? Yeah, Margaret.
So yesterday was mentioned that you do have an offline version of the IDE, and I guess it's working?
Indeed, we do. So yes, if you go, let me toss that URL up here, but I'll add it to the slides in a bit. If you go to not the online URL, but manual.cs50.io/IDE/offline, and again, I'll post these later. Yes, there's an offline version. The caveat here is that you can use the IDE offline. This is good for students who don't necessarily have internet access at home or yourself, or if you're on an airplane or slow Wi-Fi more generally. It requires installing software called Docker, which is that containers technology I referred to earlier. That's freely available, works on Macs, PCs, Linux computers, but with varying degrees of ease. And so the gotcha error there is that the technology itself client-side is a little bleeding edge, very workable, but it comes with its headaches. So the default approach we propose is indeed the online version whenever possible. And other question?
Mine was more of a comment that Render 50 was super useful for students doing the create task, because one of the things they have to do is create a full PDF of their code. And so my students that were working in the IDE were able to just toss that off very, very quickly without having to go through any headaches of copying the text or the other tools that are out online. So it was super useful for that.
Good point as well. And in particular, the College Board requires that they like use ovals around some things. And if you use Preview or Acrobat Reader, you can do those kinds of things on PDFs as well. So usage probably of Render 50 looks like this during the year, just around that one submission time in April. So I secretly, or not so secretly, just ran another command a moment ago. Let me be more explicit about this. This is among our more esoteric tools, which is generally useful for teachers or TFs who just want to have a command line environment that's almost identical to CS50 IDE. The reality is that, you know, those of us who are using computers like everyone in this room all the time, you know, it's a little annoying to have to pull up a web browser and then log in, and when you really just want to run some commands or poke around in some files. And so we also have a tool we called CLI50, Command Line Interface 50, which is designed to mimic the behavior of the IDE as much as possible with no GUI, no graphical user interface whatsoever. This too can be installed on your own Mac or PC. It too requires this Docker technology, so sometimes there are some configuration headaches. So this isn't so much student facing as it is teacher facing, we'd say. But once you have it installed, it's literally as simple as running CLI50 on your Mac or PC in a terminal window or in Windows Bash environment. And what you now see is just a blue prompt literally called workspace, which mimics what's in the IDE. And if I type ls, what I'll see is literally the contents of the current directory I'm in. And so what CLI50 essentially does is, whether you have a Mac or a PC or even a Linux computer for that matter, it will mount your current directory, whether that's your downloads folder or your documents or whatever, inside of a Linux container, which is to say it will run Linux, Ubuntu Linux, on your own Mac or PC. and then load your own files into that operating system so that within your terminal window and your blinking prompt, you're running Linux, but you have access to your own files, and therefore you have access to all of CS50's tools and all of the standard tools that come with Ubuntu Linux as well, without having to load up an IDE and without having to physically upload your files from your computer to the cloud. It can all be done locally as well. So one of the more advanced tools, but useful, and a few of us on the team use this constantly just because it's the quickest and dirtiest way to get some work done in a command line environment that's identical to the one that we have students using as well. All right, any questions on CLI 50? How is that implemented? CLI 50 is a Python program that actually behind the scenes spawns or runs a Docker container called CS50 CLI and then connects your blinking prompt to that container. And it's all open source if you want to take a closer look too. Other questions? All right, so two final tools to give you a taste of, one of which is brand new, one of which is almost done. Let me go ahead and pull up something called, let me pull up the slide first, CS50 Sandbox. So this is a new experimental tool. Experimental in that we're curious to see what people use it for, not that it's very buggy. And the use case we envision for CS50 Sandbox is quite simply this: quick and dirty web-based programming environments for you and your classes. So the IDE, to be clear, and this is ever more clear probably if you've used it before, is meant to be a persistent environment. Whenever you use the IDE and you create files and folders, they're there tomorrow. They're there next month. They're a year later for students, which is a good thing. But at the same time, if you want to introduce some topic or you want to introduce some problem or you just want to do some hands-on activity in the class, the reality is that over time, a student's IDE will begin to drift in terms of its appearance and its layout and its files and folders from every other student because sort of entropy increases, that they create files and folders and tinker with the menus and so forth. And that's fine, but it makes it a little harder for a teacher with 30 students in the room to just stand up and say, okay, everyone open a window and create hello.c. So as a normalizing factor or workflow, and as a simple tool, we introduced CS50 Sandbox, which is kind of like a lightweight CS50 IDE. The software is almost identical across the two of them, but it does even less, which is a feature, not a bug, so to speak. So when you go to sandbox.cs50.io, and you're welcome to do this even now, this tool is live, we have some pre-configured settings, all of these little radio buttons, and you, a student or a teacher can just simply choose what language they're interested in working in. Underneath the hood, the programming environment is identical. All these buttons do is it pre-configures certain settings. So we tend to use C in much of CS50. So if I choose C here, you'll see at the bottom a few checkboxes appeared. Embedded browser is disabled because you don't want to use C for browser web stuff. But we do have terminal window and a text editor and optionally an X window. If unfamiliar, X windows refers to the graphical environment that tends to come with Unix and Linux machines. So what this is proposing by default is the following. One, I'm going to give myself a terminal window. Two, I'm going to give myself a text editor whose default file name is main.c. And that's it. When I go ahead and click start now, this is going to start a sandbox for me with precisely those settings. And you'll see that as this loads up, I'm going to have a terminal window at the bottom, just like in the IDE. I'm going to have a code editor at the top, just like the IDE. But that's it. And you can't even close the tab called main.c. That's the one and only one thing there. But suppose that, so that's how I might start a class and say, hey, class, everyone go ahead and go to CS50 Sandbox and create a sandbox for C. Now that's fine, but there's clearly buttons and icons the students themselves could click. And what if I, moreover, don't want an empty file? I want to give them the beginning of a program. Or maybe I'm using this class as an opportunity to do some live coding, and I get to a point where it's kind of a nice teachable moment. You know, I'd like you all in the class to finish my thought and finish this program. Well, what we might do is something like this. If you're the teacher, either in the middle of class or maybe even beforehand, and you're doing something like writing some code here, an int main void, and you know what? I'm going to leave this as a to-do. I just want to give you a little bit of starter code, but I want to leave this as a to-do. What you can then do is click clone at top right. You'll get a bit.ly URL, which is just a URL shortener. And then you can literally tell your students or write it on the board and say, hey, everyone, go to this URL. And what every student in the room will then have is a copy of this programming environment exactly as I left it with my final keystroke. And they have their own version of it so that now they can kind of continue where you left off. This is nice too, we think, or we hope, if you have some practice problems you want to distribute in advance. You don't have to do this live. You can do it at home the night before. Save those bit.ly URLs and just add them to the Blackboard or to a handout that you're giving to students. But the design of the sandboxes is that these are ephemeral. They're cookie-based underneath the hood. And what that means is that eventually, if a student visits that same URL, their previous work won't be there anymore. If they clear their cookies, if they change browsers, if they use incognito mode, so these are really meant to be one-time use, but theoretically they'll persist for days or hours or weeks if students don't perturb their environment. But for persistence, the IDE remains the intended use case.
So if they want to save it, what are their possibilities?
If they want to save it here, there is a way where you can download the files right now. That is not made easily by design in the GUI. They can still use submit 50. They can even use check 50. So you can still have their get their work out of here into the submission software tool, which we'll see later today. And I would propose that Submit 50 is probably the right way to do that. If you're using this as a lightweight programming environment, the one other step you would do in advance, per our discussion later today, would be to set up Submit 50 to accept a word. Like if we're making a problem called Luigi, you would create a Dropbox, so to speak, called Luigi, and then have students run Submit 50 Luigi, and I'm simplifying the verbiage here, so that they could actually send their work to you or save it offline. Good question. Other questions? Yeah.
If you were showing something in the IDE, the original IDE, is there a way to create a sandbox, like you know, clicking the button flow and creating it?
Not now. That is technologically possible, and I welcome an email to me if you don't mind just kind of explaining exactly what you're thinking. potentially. Okay. Yeah. Other? Was there a question over here? Over here? Yeah.
How long does the bit.ly link persist? So if I used it in September this year, would it exist in September next year, or would it need to, should I keep it separately?
Good question. To my knowledge, it will persist forever until bit.ly is no more. But there's a few things that could go wrong along the way. They're associated with our CS50 bit.ly account, so theoretically they should persist. And the underlying technology, a tool called CodeEvolve that we're using, as of now, they do not delete files. We essentially simply forget them. So theoretically, they will persist for a year. But if you could ask me that question next summer, I can give you a better answer.
Fair.
I'll chat with them concretely about that, though, so that we can make a more genuine commitment verbally. Yeah, Margaret.
Yeah, I assume that this is going to be a lot faster to start up. So this is one of the things that we always struggle with. The internet can be really slow. It could take 5 minutes to kind of get onto CS50.ID. But I'm assuming, I couldn't tell through this internet, it's going to be pretty fast.
Theoretically, this should be faster, though the IDE starting later this summer will probably be faster as well, since we're taking over more control over the architecture and we'll have things, containers ready to go for students. I'm guessing this will still be a little faster, but the IDE will be better. All thanks to Kareem. yeah?
Is the IDE going to support more than C?
It already does. So even though most of our demonstrations and my comments are C-focused, both of these environments, the sandbox and the IDE, do support Java already, Python already, C++ already, and really any language that you can install in a Linux environment. The only caveat is that graphics tend not to work super well. So if you teach a Java class and use Swing or something like that with animation, the reality of having something be web-based over the internet is that there's just such high latency that if you have a bouncing ball, it might not be very pleasant to play with or interact with. So that's the only caveat. But this is built in here. And let me just do a quick demo. If I go back to CS50 Sandbox, one of the other features you get, if I go to Java, for instance, and I turn on an X window, if I am doing some homework assignment or some exercise using Swing or some graphical library, especially if it's not animated, if you're just doing buttons and icons and menus, that should work actually quite well. What you'll get, even though it's a little dark here on the projector, is a third region of the screen, which is the GUI. And this can be resized so that if you're actually showing students how to make a calculator or something like that with the GUI and buttons, that will work too using Java. And most any other language too. Oh, yeah?
So since you have a graphical window, can you use Python for the graphics package?
You can absolutely use Python. Save caveat. If it's animation, it might stutter a little bit graphically, but yes.
It would work like opening up a window.
Yep.
In the same way, you would have to go through your terminal on the Mac to open up a new window. You can do it through that.
Exactly. So if I choose Python on this menu here, and I also again check X window, I'll get the exact same environment, and I just the onus is on me to write Python code instead of Java code, and this will change the default file name to .py or something .py, whatever you specify. And if that weren't already enough, so this is all thanks to some friends of ours in Silicon Valley who've been writing most of the code underneath this. But if I also do Python and, for instance, do an embedded browser instead of an X window, what you can also even do when you get later into the semester with CS50 or your own courses with Flask or with web programming more generally, you can actually embed a browser in this. And so right now it looks a little ugly because I haven't written any code. But you can actually write web-based code over here, HTML, CSS, Python code, and then students will immediately see the results here without having to open different tabs or different windows. It will auto reload right here. So it's all a nice inclusive environment. And better yet, you yourselves can create little starter code or examples or small problems that you can then distribute as via cloning before. So we will be very curious, quite seriously, to see what folks use this for in the coming months since this just got finished a few weeks ago. All right, and then lastly, let me introduce the tool that isn't quite ready, but I'm literally working on it in all of my free time, which is CS50 Labs. So CS50 Labs is a superset of CS50 Sandbox. It has all those capabilities plus the ability to add instructions or problem set specification, if you will, all in one environment. So let me explain this one by way of example first, and then just give a quick verbal overview of what you'll be able to do with it. So this is a very early prototype of this environment that is actually functional, and I'll put up the URL in a bit if folks want to tinker during break or later today, but the user interface is going to change. So you'll notice that it looks kind of like the sandbox on the right-hand side because there's a code editor and there's the terminal window, but you also have on the left the potential for more beautiful problem statements. And so this uses Markdown, if you're familiar, .md files, which is a very quick and dirty way of creating formatted text without knowing HTML or caring about formatted text itself. And so you can embed images and boldfacing and italics and all of this. So what we've started to use Labs for is the following. Labs we envision for CS50 here in Cambridge, at least, being used for practice problems. I think one omission we've had in our curriculum for some time is a corpus of small bite-sized problems. Rather, our existing problems and more generally problem sets tend to be fairly larger scale projects. They're domain specific, like the forensics I mentioned and the music and so forth. But we haven't traditionally had like, you know, a dozen problems on for loops or a dozen problems on while loops or on variables or sort of stuff that isn't all that intellectually fun, but it is just genuinely good practice. It's good for muscle memory, and we just haven't really put our attention into creating that corpus of problems until this summer. And so what we envision using this interface for initially is exactly that, sort of bite-sized contained problems that really help students develop muscle memory and understand very specific concepts without them necessarily being as open-ended as things like the forensics and music and other problem sets. And what we'll do, much like this, is we'll have a bit of a narrative here on the left-hand side, and essentially the prototype we put together here was this. It occurred to me that when we use this example, which many of you might know, Mario, where we have students recreate with hashtags those bricks represented in squares in Super Mario Brothers 1 from yesteryear, the reality is that though we do have a pretty detailed specification that you might have seen, and we have Zamyla embedded in that specification to walk students through it, the reality is that this is a problem that really lends itself to scaffolding, sort of starting students here, helping them take the proverbial baby step to sort of build on top of that, and then one and one and one more step until finally they have something akin to this pyramid. So a practice problem in the future might now look like this. If I go to step one, we propose in this that students actually implement the opposite initially. It's actually a little bit easier to implement a pyramid that's left aligned like this, because if you think about how printing works on a terminal window, it's very easy to imagine a for loop that starts here, prints one, then on the next row prints two, then on the next row prints three, four, five, six, without having to figure out how you can kind of move all of those bricks over to the right to right align them, which is another cognitive step. So we propose that students first do this step here. But what this practice environment will do will allow students to check each of those incremental steps as they're scaffolded toward the solution. So in this older interface, they'll check a little box here, and they'll get immediate feedback, yay or nay, you did this step correctly. Once they've passed that step and we move on to step two here, zero indexed, what we propose next in this particular practice problem is, you know what? go ahead and build on the code you just wrote, even though it's not the end game, and go ahead and start printing out a bunch of dots before some of those pyramids to sort of shift those bricks over, right aligning them, albeit with very explicit dots where there will ultimately just be white space. So then they can check the little box and they can check their work at this stage and they'll get a yay or nay, your code is as it should be now. And then in the third and final step here, do we propose to students, you know what, go ahead and just get rid of those dots so that finally you're printing exactly what is intended, having scaffolded them from here to here. And along the way, they've written some code that they don't need in the end. All those dots need to go away. But it's a nice environment for taking students step by step through problems. And we envision doing the same in smaller form problems with just loops and conditions and variables and functions and the like. And then ultimately, will students just use submit 50 and check 50, as you'll soon see, to submit very work from this environment as well. Okay, but yeah. Render 50 would work in here too. I need to give some thought as to how would it get the PDF out of it in an easy way, because there's not quite the same file browser or download button. But let me give that some thought. Good question. And now, lastly, and this is the part that we're still building, teachers, yourselves, if you would like, will be able to create these problems. You don't need to turn only to us for these. Essentially, what will happen moving forward is that if you sign up for your own free GitHub account, which you might already have, and you create your own repository, sort of a folder in your account, so long as you have a few markdown files, sort of simple HTML files, and any sample or starter code you want students to see on the right-hand side, it will be as simple as saving one or more files in your own GitHub account. And then what students will do is essentially this. In the future, they'll be able to go to labs.cs50.io, and if they want to access not our practice problems but yours, they could go to something like Acme High School's organization and the problems repository. And this is maybe period one's problems on a Monday, and this problem is called Luigi. And what we will do programmatically is we will look in Acme High School's account, specifically in the repo called problems, in the folder called period1/Monday/Luigi, and if you have files there that accord to our specifications, we'll load them up into the environment, and you'd never even need to let us know that you're using the environment in this way, completely self-service. Any questions on labs? Yeah. Yes.
So we would have access to it.
And that would be amazing. What we expect the landing page of labs.cs50.io to become is exactly that, a curated corpus of problems that some are from us and ideally even more are from other folks.